Sahanavavatu Sahanao Bhunaktu Saha Viryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Basari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 93. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, O King, Maharaj Parikit, but for the Lord's personal desire, there is no cause for his appearance, disappearance, or activities. As the Supersoul, he knows everything. Consequently, there is no cause that affects him, not even the results of fruitive activities. Right? So, Krishna, what he does is simply by his desire, right? Because he's the Lord of the Icha Shakti. So it's what he does, what goes on, what's around him, his associates, the environment he's in, that's all due to his desire. So that's why he can't be controlled by his energies, because it's his desire that creates the environment. Right? So he won't be controlled by that. Yes.
We can also say that our environment is the product of our desire, just we are not so much aware of it.
You could, but the point is we don't operate that fulfillment of that desire, that creation of that environment. You know what I'm saying? So we're controlled by it. See, because what happens is that us, let us say, okay, just for example, means and it, we have desire, so then an environment comes up, we take part in it. But it's not that we really have the choice to not take part in it. You understand? While Krishna, it's only coming up because that actually is his desire that he wants to take part in. So for him, it always remains the same. It'll have variety, but it'll remain the same. But for us, then it'll keep adjusting because when we try something because it's not perfect, senses aren't perfect, you know, the cheating propensity. Senses aren't perfect, cheating propensity, illusion, and making mistakes. So then there's always going to be something. We want to adjust it. We want to redo it. We want to do it in a different way. And so then it starts changing. Right? But for Krishna, it's already perfect. So there's only variety within the perfect. But it's due to his desire. Right? So because he's created it, then there's no, he's not controlled by it. Srila Prabhupada comments, this verse points out the difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and an ordinary living being. An ordinary living being receives a particular type of body according to his past activities. Karmana daivane tarena jantur deho papatthaye Srimad Bhagavatam 3.31.1. A living being is never independent and can never appear independently. Rather, one is forced to accept a body imposed upon him by Maya according to his past karma. Right? So we're within what we have, we may be making some adjustments. But the point is the situations we're in, that's as explained in the Bhagavad Gita 1861, Yantara Rudhani Mayaya. The body is a kind of machine created and offered to the living entity by the material energy under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the living entity must accept a particular type of body awarded to him by Maya, the material energy, according to his karma. One cannot independently say, give me a body like this or give me a body like that. One must accept whatever body is offered by the material energy. This is the position of the ordinary living entity. When Krishna descends, however, he does so out of his merciful compassion for the fallen souls, as the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4:8, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapa nartaya sambhavami uge uge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I advent myself millennium after millennium. The Supreme Lord is not forced to appear. Indeed, no one can subject him to force, for he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone is under his control, and he is not under the control of anyone else, right? Because it's his potencies that anybody else is functioning. So how can they use his energies against him? It just can't happen, because he's the source of the energy. So one thing is this, you know, you just have something, and then you use your own energy. But the point is your own energy is coming from Krishna. So that means you can't actually use it against him, because it's coming from him.
Isn't it what we are doing all the time? We're trying to enjoy separate.
That's things. There, but can you overpower him? That's the point being made. No one can overpower. He's the most powerful. Means we may independently use, but I mean, what are we talking about? You know, a grain of dust we're moving around and, you know.
Here the body is compared to a machine.
Yes.
And this is the case in the spiritual, in the material world. But in the spiritual world, then Krishna, you know, his body and his soul is the same.
Yes.
What about the other devotees? Is the machine, is the body acting like a machine, or is it the same?
It's an expansion of themselves.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a non-difference.
Mm-hmm. Right. So let me correct and say that most misunderstandings come from this misunderstanding of the love of desire. So therefore then we get that God is either only benevolent, or he's ambivalent, or there's an aspect of him that's malevolent, because we don't actually understand his actual desire. So therefore then we come up with all of these.
Yes, you could say. And then there's our own, what we want, and then we will project that onto the Lord. You know, so that's extremely popular. Like that. So, that's why then the highest aspect of the science is understanding the Lord's desire. Right? And so those who understand that, they interact and take part in relationship with the Lord based on his desire. While we will do, we'll follow the rules. But why do we want to follow the rules? That means, in other words, our impetus for following the rules is what? Will gain from it. Right? So that's the whole thing. But it's not about Krishna's gain from it. That's the meaning of sarvadharmam pritya. So we'll take it that I have the knowledge, I have the skills, I'm following everything very nicely. That's actually the highest point. But it's a matter of, no, it's what is Krishna's desire? How are we fulfilling that? That becomes the main thing. Does that make sense? That's then what we're trying to do. So that's what we'll see as we go on, that we're trying to get accustomed to that. It means it's always coming up, it's always been presented. But we'll see now more and more it will come up, because this chapter is then when Krishna appears. And after this, it'll all be based on his desire. So what we're going to see in the 10th canto is his Icha Shakti, and his out of his desire, he's taking part. So here in the material world, out of compassion for the living entities, therefore then the material world's created so that we can take part. But the real point is that so that we come to the position of serving him personally. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Many times devotees, they have a confusion.
A little louder.
Is it Icha Shakti of the Lord?
Icha Shakti.
Yeah.
That's why it's never discussed. You know what I'm saying? No one talks about Icha, Kriya, and Jnana Shaktis.
Yeah.
Maybe Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj might talk about it, but like that. But I'm just saying, you know, very few will talk about it. Shivaram Maharaj might talk about it. Few that have, you know, that go into the technicalities of the thing. So
that's the problem.
Oh, no. Yeah, maybe. But that's why we're here and that's why we're learning it. That's why Prabhupada wanted us to sit and actually in a, how do you say, you know, with that focus of studying the books. So you read them, you study them. Because reading means you just go chronologically through. Mm-hmm. Okay, seriatically through. Excuse me. But then you have to be able to try to put the points together, make the connections, see what's going on, analyze what's being discussed. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's just what. So that's the meaning of manana. So for most, shravana, you know, is the position they work from. So shravanam and kirtanam. Mm-hmm. So that works nicely. But the point is that will be improved when one contemplates it and then practices that in your own life. Mm-hmm. You know, because sometimes, how can I make others into a devotees? How can I convince them? It's because you're doing. If you're convinced, you can convince others. If you're not convinced, how you'll convince? You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. You know, it probably gives the example of I think it's that Charlie Chaplin movie where he's in the ballroom and he stands up and somehow or another his suit gets ripped. The back, it gets ripped. So instead of feeling bad about it and all that, then he just gets up and dances with such, you know, panache that everybody else is seeing it. Oh, and then they all start ripping their tail coats. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that if you're convinced, others will follow. You know, what we call fashion, we say it's in fashion. What it means actually is that there's some people that are convinced this looks good, so we follow it. And as soon as those people who think this looks good start saying this isn't good, that's when it goes out of fashion. We think, oh, everybody's doing it, that's why it's in fashion. No, it's because people are convinced that's why it's in fashion. Because you can say, oh, that's out of fashion, but people are wearing it and they look good. Because they're convinced. So that's the thing. If you're convinced, you can convince others. So that's the whole point. That's why the second stage is contemplation and practice. So at least you have to be convinced that it's correct. Maybe you don't fully understand it. You understand why it's good. The realization's not there. But if you continually contemplate and practice, that will bring one to realization. Right? So in other words, you hear the knowledge, then you contemplate it, you gain an understanding. From understanding and practicing, then you come to realization. That's your best position. So then the natural next stage from that is to teach. So what you're convinced of, that's what actually you can teach. So an individual, oh, what do you say, how do you do? That's because we're not convinced. We don't know, or we don't have realization. Maybe we're convinced, but we don't have realization. But by practicing, we'll gain realization. Because we're thinking, oh, this comes up, then we'll do this, that comes up, we'll do that. And all. But no, it's behind that. It's that you know what you're trying to get to, you have technique, so as it comes up, you're just moving through it to get to what you're doing. So it's not about the obstacle, it's not about what's the technique to get around the obstacle, it's about how do you continue forward to the goal. It's a very different thing. Externally, it'll look the same. You understand? But the difference is one, you actually see the goal. The other one is then you're dealing with what's happening in front of your eyes just right now. The other one, you're seeing farther. And then you're dealing with whatever comes up. So if one is convinced in that way, then whatever someone says or whatever someone does, then one can just adjust with that. Because you know where you're trying to get to. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Means you're applying detail, but you're not getting caught up in it.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the difference between the expert and the master. It means the someone who's new at it, they have a little knowledge, but they don't know so much detail. So what detail they do know, they can use. What they don't, they can't. Someone who's expert knows a wide range of detail, and he can use it as long as the detail is there. But if it's anything different than what he expects, he can't deal with it. Master means then you see what the detail's for. You see the principle. So then you can actually work with any detail, even if you don't know the detail. Does that make sense? So that's the levels you're trying to get to. So that would mean then, once you come to that point of realization, then teaching becomes very easy. Because that's the natural next phase. But you can teach at any point, because you've heard, what you've heard you can tell someone else. What you understand, you can get someone else to understand. But what you've realized, then you can get others to realize. So, yes.
Different people have different intellectual abilities and different ability to contemplate. Can we say that everybody should contemplate on philosophy as much as he can?
Yes, because that's all you require. It's just like, okay, let us say you will eat 100 grams of rice, okay? How many grams will the elephant eat?
Thousands.
Yeah, so the whole point is do you require that?
No.
So that's the whole point, is how much your intellectual ability is all you have to use. Because it's a matter of surrendering to the Lord. So it's not volume, it's what you have. You know what I'm saying? You know, the squirrel doesn't have to puff himself up to be as big as a monkey to be on an equal level with the monkeys in Ram's Leela. He just does squirrel stuff, and the monkeys do monkey stuff. Like that. So that's the whole point. What you can perceive, that's what you contemplate. If you can't perceive it, don't worry about it, unless it's something that's recommended. You know, let's say like, the importance that we're not God. So maybe we can't see that, but it is recommended, so then we make an endeavor to try to understand it. Is that, so. See, there's this thing, is that when it means if you push with the stomach a little bit or make the stomach firm, then the sound will come out rather than as you're talking, you're sucking the sound in. So I'm saying you'll hear it nicely, but nobody else will.
About the techniques, you know, that have been taught in the temple, so
yes,
that devotees can help in preaching, you know, the different classes. So,
right.
Yeah. So how much is that helpful, you know?
It means that's helpful because you have something to think from. As Bhurijan Prabhu points out, is that if you have no context, then how do you contemplate? So what you're doing is giving a context. If you think that, no, this technique is what exactly will work, that'll never work because there is no situation that's exactly the same. So the reason that people who can give that seminar and give technique is because they'll understand the principle. Now, whether they're just intuitively or actually intellectually understanding is another thing. So if they're only intuitively, then they'll intellectualize on the detail and then give that to you, and then you'll try to apply that and you won't be able to apply it, and so it won't work. Right? But if they actually contemplate the principle of it, then they'll use detail to explain it so that you get a context. But then as you inquire on it and that, they'll point out and keep bringing it back to the principle. But to do that takes a lot longer, because if people don't have to adjust their mentality, they're much happier with a seminar. You just come in, get a few things, write it down, okay, that, ask a few smart questions, look good, and, you know, you're everything's fine. That's what people want. People will pay for that. But if you're going to actually go there and change the way they look at things and that means the way they're looking at it's not actually up to the standard, who wants that? Yeah, so therefore then you have to be... That's why the one goes very smoothly and the other doesn't. Because the second one, people don't think that you're giving them anything. Does that make sense? You're discussing one thing. They're saying, okay, so use this technique like this. No. You're trying to get to this. You're trying to understand the mentality. And so then they think you're saying, oh, don't do that technique. Because their mentality is perfect, and so they're going that, and they've said, do this, and you say, no, it's not that, it's something else. Oh, so you don't want to do that. Okay, what's this? What's this technique you're talking about? No, it's a mentality. What do you mean it's a mentality? What's mentality got to do with it? You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty, is that when we say it's a cultural revolution, that means it's not in what you're doing, it's how you perceive it. Because culture is a perception. It means there is what a cultured person does. But that's just the point. The cultured person is doing that. Not that that makes the cultured person. Right? Means Kali Raj was dressed up as a king. Was he a king? No. But that's the whole point. It's the mentality makes them what it is. Right? You know what I'm saying? Let us say you take a nice Calcutta gentleman, okay? Take him out in the middle of nowhere like that, dress him up like a village bumpkin like that, and stick him out in the middle of the mud. He'll still act like a gentleman. He may not look like one, but he'll still act like one. Right? And if you give him the opportunity, he'll take a bath and dress differently. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that culture is a mentality. Then there's the activities. That's how you can tell the difference between the rich people and the new rich people. Because the new rich people go by, oh, the rich people are doing this. But the rich people can tell they're new rich because they're only doing this. They don't have the mentality. Right? And then that's your problem with, okay, this is what successful people do. But what's the mentality of a successful person? That they can't teach. Because that, then you'd have to be able to observe that. So that's the thing. We always like to turn everything into detail. Detail is how you're going to manifest anything. So yes, detail is important. But the point is you're manifesting from something behind that.
It's a package.
Yes, it's a package. But the important is the mentality. Then you have the knowledge and skills. You have knowledge and skills that you can apply, but if you don't have the right mentality, how it's going to actually get the right result? Because you can say, "Is no, physically it gets the result, but the point is how do people like that result?" Right? In other words, the guy that's saying, "How do you like me now?" No one likes him. You understand? So that's the whole.
Can we say that that's exactly our position? Because when we join, we copy what is supposed to be done.
Yes.
But mentality.
Yes, but the point is if that's the meaning of sincere, because sincere is a mentality. So if that sincerity is there, that we actually want to develop love for Krishna, serve the Vaishnavas, you know, do things like that, that mentality will develop. But we have to be aware that it's the mentality is what you're trying to do. So the residents of Braj, because of their mentality, they do certain activities. We don't have the mentality, so we start with doing the activities. That starts to adjust our mentality, because our mentality will go anywhere. That's why regulation then is progressive, because it constricts you to a particular situations and activities that normally you wouldn't do. And then within that, it's easier to think of Krishna and why you're doing the things than if you were doing something else. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea, is that it's like reverse engineering. You know, you're doing things backwards. But the point is the purpose is since we only see external, therefore we connect that external to Krishna. Then if we think that connection, that's done and that's all we need, then we'll have a problem. But we have to develop that mood. So if that mood is understood, that's what's important, then when somebody becomes good at the basic knowledge and practices, then they'll move on to trying to improve the quality of what they're doing. Otherwise, they'll think, okay, I'm doing this fine. Now, what other details can I move on to that are more important? So either we'll move on to some forms of, you know, how you say, mentally speculative, you know, Raga Nuga Bhakti, you know, then therefore we're advanced, or we'll get into trying to become materially successful. I'm doing this for Krishna, so how can I become very expert at doing that for Krishna? And that's the symptom of my advancement. Right? Rather than I improve the mood, so naturally as the mood improves, since it's for Krishna, I'll naturally improve the quality of what I'm doing. Right? So the technique will improve as the quality of my mentality gets better. Otherwise, I'll simply improve the quality, or I'll go for some, you know, non-important devotional details and try to improve those. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
Would it be accurate to say that those who are exclusively focused on the details are working more on the platform of the mind, which is binary, and those who look into the principles are more on the intellectual platform?
Not necessarily, because you can get into details on both, because also the mind, the intelligence is also basically binary. Because it means the mind is accepting and rejecting, but the intelligence is just seeing what's common and what's different. That's their fundamental principles. Then there'll be other things within that what they'll do, but that's mainly what they do. So that's why it means... otherwise, if binary wasn't the thing, and, you know, connected to intelligence, why are nerds the one that do computer stuff? Otherwise, you would see, you know, ballet dancers who would be the best at computers, right? You know, the smart guys, they don't know what to do, and they're all standing outside there at the back door of the theater, just waiting for when, you know, one of the ballerinas will come out and they can ask him a question, you know, like that. Of course, they have to give him a rose or something like that, you know, nice and like, you know, then they'll answer their technical questions and they'll go back in.
Makes sense.
Okay, yeah, so it both go together.
Okay.
So it's the consciousness that is the one you're trying to change. Because the good qualities themselves, because we mentioned about the qualities, but the actual essential point is the consciousness. Because the qualities, we can still use them in a bad way. Like Duryodhana, he goes to his father, he deals very nicely and everything like that. So he's using the good qualities. But what's his purpose? Right? It's all for himself. So he's just, in other words, he's using the good qualities and all that that are defined in Dharma, but for niti. So that's his only point. Is that? Okay. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of. Do you read this? No. I invent myself millennium after millennium. The Supreme Lord is not forced to appear. Indeed, no one can subject him to force, for he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone is under his control, and he is not under the control of anyone else. Foolish people who, because of a poor fund of knowledge, think that one can equal Krishna or become Krishna, are condemned in every way. Right? So in every way means there is no aspect where there is something, no, it's this, no, it's that. It's just not happening. It's only out of devotion that Krishna will allow himself to be controlled on that platform. But as far as power and these other things, no one can control them. Because he's the source of it. You know, it's just like, how you say, the father's giving the son an allowance, and then the son with his allowance says, well, hey, you know, I'm going to buy you out. You know, it's kind of like, you know, if the father stops giving him money then. You know, so it's... No one can equal or surpass Krishna, who is therefore described as Asamordva. Yes.
This particular term, Asamordva, can be used only for Krishna, not for the other Vishnu Tattvas, like the other incarnations?
No, Vishnu is Asamordva, but, you know, like that. Because Krishna means he's manifesting fully his full nature. Any other manifestation means he's only manifesting a part of his full nature. Even though that aspect is complete in itself, and it's unlimited, because every aspect of Krishna is unlimited. So every mood, every activity, all his energies, they're all unlimited. But then he's only manifesting a certain aspects of those unlimited. Krishna means it's the full aspect. So Nrisinga is Krishna. You understand? Varaha is Krishna. That's why those who know will use these terms. Like some, I forget who it was. I think it was in the fifth or sixth canto. Yeah, I think sixth canto. That I think Krishna's coming, you know, after a yajna or tapasya or something, and manifesting. And he's obviously in either a four-armed or eight-armed form. But then many times you refer to him as Krishna. Right? So the point is Krishna's come in this way. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we shouldn't make that much distinction. We make distinctions so we understand the difference in pastimes and the flavor and the mood of what devotees are there, what activities they do. But other than that, no. But to make it, oh, Vishnu's one thing and Krishna's another, devotees tend to do that. And Prabhupada said, don't do that. Again, air comes out, not goes in. Yes. Means you can make sound by, like that, you can make sound, but if it should come out, then it's really good.
Because in Brahma Samhita, it mentions that the God Chira will make one candle, twice all the other candles.
Yes, so they're all equal. Yes, but it's just a matter of how much is manifest. They're pointing out that they all the same potency. But it's just a matter of, for the pastime, then what they manifest. You understand? So Nrisinga Dev only manifests that aspect of protecting Prahlad and killing Hiranyakashipu and his friends. Right? He doesn't do other things. So he just does that, or Krishnigarbha, then he comes and he sees the Prachetas, he's the one that sits on top of the mountain, for the churning of the milk ocean, and like this. So they just do specific things, right? So one could say, well, Krishna's doing specific, but his full energies are manifest, so there's no aspect of his personality that's not part of that. It'll be in its perfect balance, but only it may only have a particular aspect. You understand? But that aspect being there, that's where it fits in. It's not the whole thing. Does that make sense? It's like you have your dessert and you put some whipped cream on top of that, right? Especially if you have the cans. But then you get kids, they just take the can and just eat the can. They don't bother with the dessert. You understand? So that it's just a matter of how much is manifest. Okay.
Then Krishna is called Shaktiman, and then you have Shakti also.
Yes.
So then in that case, Shakti and Shaktiman are equal.
They're so equal, Shakti, but where does Shakti come from?
Shaktiman.
Yes, so therefore, as Krishna expands, Shakti expands. Mm-hmm. That way they're equal. Yeah, they're but it's not that Shakti expands and Shaktiman doesn't. We're not talking about some weirdo nerd sci-fi here. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Sci-fi, science fiction. Okay, yeah. Yeah. No? Yeah. According to the Vishvakosha dictionary, the word Maya is used in the case of false pride and also in the sense of compassion. For an ordinary living being, the body in which he appears is his punishment. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 7:14, Daivi hiyesha gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But when Krishna comes, the word maya refers to his compassion or mercy upon the devotees and fallen souls. by his potency, the Lord can deliver everyone, whether sinful or pious, right? So the one aspect of Maya is we have a material body because of punishment due to our previous material desire. So the particular one we have, it has our facility, but it also has the difficulties that come with it. But when Krishna is kind, then that Maya, then that is then his compassion, which then we can engage in his service, right? So,
It's not the same Maya.
Well, you have Mahamaya and Yoga Maya. Yeah. So they're both Maya. So one's compassion and one's punishment.
So for the devotees, when the difficulties, they face difficulties, it is the Yoga Maya, not the Mahamaya.
Depends how they view it. It means technically it's a being arranged in that way, but whether we perceive it that way or not, then that's whether we'll get the spiritual benefit from that advance or will not. When something goes wrong, do we see it as Krishna's compassion, or do something goes wrong and why is this happening to me? I'm a devotee.
If we see both.
then it's mixed.
Are you going to Maya?
You have both Mayas happening at once. So that means you'll be advancing on one side and being kicked on the other side.
You end up standing in the same place.
Yeah. But if the mood is right, then one will slowly move more towards the Yoga Maya and less towards the...
Popular.
Popular, yes. Mixed, everyone's in the popular. That's what DJs are for, right? Mixing, right? Yeah. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead acts through his material energy in the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this causative manifestation, just to deliver the living entities by his compassion, and to stop the living entities' birth, death, and duration of materialistic life. But thus he enables the living entity to return home back to Godhead." So even though we're an illusion, that Maya, he, by his compassion or his desire, then that gives us the opportunity to go back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada comments, "Materialistic men sometimes ask why God has created the material world for the suffering of the living entities. Material creation is certainly meant for the suffering of the conditioned souls, who are part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 15.7. Mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. All the living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and are as good as the Lord qualitatively. But quantitatively, there is a great difference between them. For the Lord is unlimited, whereas the living entities are limited. Thus, the Lord possesses unlimited potency for pleasure, and the living entities have a limited pleasure potency. Ananda Mayo Vyasa, Vedanta Sutra 1.1.12. Both the Lord and the living entity, being qualitatively spirit-soul, have the tendency for peaceful enjoyment. But when the part of the Supreme Lord, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unfortunately wants to enjoy independently without Krishna, he is put into the material world, where he begins his life as Brahma and is gradually degraded to the status of an ant or a worm in stool." Right, so that's your two. The top of the cycle is Brahma, the bottom is, yeah. This is called Mana Shastran Indriyani Prakriti Stani Karshati. There is a great struggle for existence because a living entity conditioned by material nature is under nature's full control. Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Kadamani Sarvashaha. Bhagavad Gita 3.27. Because of his limited knowledge, however, the living entity thinks he is enjoying in this material world. Manashastanindriyani Prakriti Stani Karshati. He is actually under the full control of material nature, but he still thinks himself independent. Ahankara Vimudhatma Kartaham Iti Manyate. Even when he is elevated by speculative knowledge and tries to merge into the existence of Brahman, the same disease continues. So he still thinks he's the controller and enjoyer. So that's the point. Even he gets to the liberated position, that desire to control and enjoy remains. That's why the impersonalists always come back. It's guaranteed. Right. Like that. So only when you give up that I'm the controller and enjoyer and see that I'm servant of Krishna, then one can move beyond to eternal liberation and go to the spiritual realm.
Yes. Krishna's energy to enjoy is called Icha, and the living entity's propensity to enjoy called Maya. That's
basically. It means it's just part, because the living entity having part of his nature is ananda, then to enjoy is natural. But the point is they're very small, and so we're trying to enjoy something a lot bigger than us. So what means the jiva themselves has the independence. The body doesn't. The environment doesn't. Because where does the energy to make that environment work come from? It comes from Krishna. So that means is that if we want to enjoy, then we have to connect ourselves with Krishna, because he controls the environment. Does that make sense? That's the whole. So then when that's recognized, so even if someone, let's say, he's given by material energy a certain capacity and abilities, but that still, that ability is coming from Krishna. But we're thinking, yes, he goes out there, he makes money, he controls things, he makes things happen, but that energy that he's doing with is still coming from Krishna. So that's the point, is that they're limited. So they'll be controlled by Maya. Whatever goes right, they do right according to Shastra, they'll get a good result. Whatever they do wrong according to Shastra, they'll get a bad result. But we connect to Krishna, that we try to see everything in connection to Krishna, that all this energy that we're engaged in connected to Krishna, that will give us then that happiness, the ananda. But it's just, we're still thinking, no, I can do this.
Then we have the enjoyer and the enjoyer. Okay?
Enjoyer so and the enjoyer.
Enjoyer,
okay.
Enjoyer is Krishna, enjoyer is the integral potency.
Yes.
You see, the jiva is the tapasyami acting as an instrument, you know, between the enjoyer.
Yes.
So technically speaking, you know, there shouldn't be any independence really for the jiva, because the instrument is completely in control of either of or both.
It means the instrument is controlled by the desire of the subject, but it's acting according to the nature of the object. Right? Yeah. That's why it's an instrument. It's the connection between the subject and object.
So it's playing as a verb.
As a
word.
A verb. Yeah. I'm just saying we're using that as the example. No, it's an assistant to the verb.
Assistant to the verb.
Means you're cooking. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're cooking. So what's instrumental to the cooking? Pots and all these things. You're stirring. What's instrumental? Right. So that's the point, is that it's not the verb. That's the point. We think we are the verb. Yeah. But we're not in control. Right? As Krishna, it says, Krishna is... Prabhupada mentioned he's the vertical and horizontal threads in the fabric. Right? Now we'll just see the fabric. And we'll try to control the fabric. But why is it fabric? Because of the horizontal and vertical threads. So it's those threads that hold it together. That's what makes the fabric. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. We don't see Krishna. We just see the fabric. But we don't see actually Krishna is what holds it together. You know, so that's what we have to see. That's why then we think we're the verb. But, I mean, yes.
Next.
Oh, we finished. Aruhya kritshrena param padam tata parantyadaha. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32. Even having attained that param padam, having merged into the impersonal Brahman, he falls again to the material world. Right? Because he only, by location, came to the impersonal, the Brahman. He didn't actually come to by the proper mentality. He understands he's Brahman, but he doesn't understand that he is servant Brahman, and then there's supreme Brahman. He thinks, I am supreme Brahman. So then, how can you stay? Because then if you're supreme Brahman, okay, keep yourself there. You know, so it doesn't work, it doesn't happen. So he falls again into the material world. In this way, the conditioned soul undergoes a great struggle for existence in this material world. And therefore, the Lord, out of compassion for him, appears in this world and instructs him. Thus the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 4:7, Yada yada yadarmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Whenever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. The real dharma is to surrender unto Krishna, but the rebellious living entity, instead of surrendering to Krishna, engages in adharma, in a struggle for existence to become like Krishna. Right? So here we see as we're getting closer to the aspect of adharma means not connected to Krishna. That's important, because even one's doing things technically proper, if it's not being done for Krishna, is still technically adharma. You'll advance materially in whatever area you've applied, but you're not going to get actually advanced Krishna consciously until it's being done for Krishna. Right? That one's making that endeavor for Krishna, even though one's not remembering and may have all kinds of distractions, there is progress, of course. But there's also then the problems that come up from mixed devotional service. That's the point of mixed. Mixed means why mixed can gets you somewhere is because there is pure, so you're moving forward, because it's mixed with material, that's causing the problem. Therefore, out of compassion, Krishna creates this material world to give the living entity a chance to understand his real position, right? That's where then Yoga Maya gives us the opportunity to take up Krishna consciousness in our position of Mahamaya, where we're not interested. Right? So even though we're in a position of being punished for turning our attention away from the Lord is compassionate, gives us the opportunity to turn our attention towards the Lord. Bhagavad Gita and similar Vedic literatures are presented so that the living entity may understand his relationship with Krishna. Viraischa sarvedaham eva vedyaha. Bhagavad Gita 15:15. All these Vedic literatures are meant to enable the human being to understand what he is, what his actual position is, and what the relationship is with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is called Brahma Jigyasa. Right? So that means any body of Vedic knowledge, that's what it's meant for. But much of the time we'll approach these Vedic knowledges without that understanding. We want to know this knowledge, this technique, and that's all. But by doing that, we actually get distracted. So we're only taking the Mahamaya aspect, not the Yogamaya aspect. So the Vedic literatures, why they're perfect, while they're authority, is because they all can be utilized in the Lord's service very nicely. That's their purpose. But now if we forget that, then having forgot that, then we will become distracted by the secondary aspects that they discuss. And then we'll take that's the important aspect. No, it's not. It's use in Krishna's service. That's what's important. So if that's appreciated, then any Vedic literature will be able to help you progress in Krishna consciousness. But if that doesn't have that understanding, then they'll only distract you from Krishna consciousness. Of course, they're going to distract you in a nicer way than non-Vedic literature, but there'll still be distraction. That's why then all Vedic literature has to be seen through the vision that is given in Srimad Bhagavatam. So if aparavidya is viewed from the position of paravidya, transcendental knowledge, then material knowledge then becomes perfect. But if material knowledge is seen without transcendental knowledge, then it becomes ignorance or avidya. Does that make sense? Every conditioned soul is struggling, but human life provides the best chance for him to understand his position. Therefore, this verse says, anugrahas tan nivritehe, indicating that the false life of repeated birth and death must be stopped, and the conditioned soul must be educated. This is the purpose of the creation. Right? So the false life means it's not being done in connection to Krishna. It's not the position we're in. It's not the facilities we have. It's what we do with it that makes it progressive or not. So that's why I said you don't have to change your position. You have to change the consciousness. Right? So that means the focus is on changing the consciousness, not on the position or the detail. Right? Because if you change the consciousness, naturally with you'll change the detail to match the consciousness. Right? That's the whole point. But if we just change only the detail, but it's according to recommended change in detail, then gradually with proper association we'll become aware that it's actually a change of the consciousness that you're actually looking for. And then when we make that, the natural practices of someone with advanced consciousness, you're already practicing. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, somebody has a good work ethic as a materialist. So when they come to Krishna consciousness, and then they learn to work for Krishna, then they can engage that in Krishna service very nicely. But, as we see, that good work ethic did not make them a devotee. Right? So it's not that that's the important, but it's useful once you come in contact. Right? So, therefore, following prescribed details with the purpose of developing the proper consciousness, that's recommended, because when you develop the consciousness, the practices are there. Now we take a reverse of that, where we say, oh, because it's only about the consciousness, therefore we don't adjust the details, but the focus is on the details, not on the consciousness, then we're not developing a consciousness, and the practices that are recommended we're not developing. So now what do we have? Not a whole lot. Yes?
This is coming back to the point of Guna, right?
Guna. Yes. Yeah, because we're taking it... The karma is not the important... Yes, because karma is connected to the Guna. Right? So the Guna, if that's there, then the karma becomes useful. So if we change the Guna to Krishna consciousness, then we can engage the karma very nicely. Right? So in other words, when we develop the transcendental guna, then we'll be able to use the material gunas and the material karma nicely in Krishna's service. But otherwise, if it's not about Krishna consciousness, then the guna and karma I have is all I'm going to end up with. And the problem is what's going to change it? Because if I say, oh, you don't have to change anything, you don't have to change externally, but you do have to change the consciousness and the engagement in activities of devotional service. So then if we reduce down where, you know, we don't read, we don't chant, we don't associate, we don't do all these things, what's going to change? Because we're already doing what we're doing, and just because, you know, how you say, baby Jesus is going to save you, then and we never think of that except when there's a problem, then how does anything ever work? You know what I'm saying? And that's baby Jesus, because, you know, he probably won't remember that you haven't thought of him for the last 2 years. Right? Well, the adult Jesus, he might remember that. So. No?
Good strategy.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
Can you say that in the Kanishka stage it is required to follow the next vector of instruction, this particular body rigidly, and then develop the consciousness, and then one comes to the Uttama, then automatically it's like the consciousness is already advanced, because of which it naturally follows, you know?
Yes, it naturally follows. The point is you're going to follow those things, what's given in Nectar Devotion, or what the activities that those who advance follow. How does Rupa Goswami open the Nectar Devotion? First chapter, first page, he's talking about the symptoms of Bhava Bhakti. Right? That these symptoms and their mentalities. Right? And therefore then the effect of those mentalities. Then from there he describes the general understanding of devotional service. Having described that, so now that we think it's something of value, then he gets into the aspects of sadhana. And then where do those aspects of sadhana come from? They come from the Lord's associates. All those different 64 items that are there, you'll see that Lord Chaitanya and his associates, they all follow that. That's where it comes from. But we'll take it that, oh no, this is just a technique and it's something else. But that's because of the impersonalism. Because impersonalism, then we think it's just a mentality, there's no activity. I am Brahman, that's all. So.
Maybe if we put in a dangerous position where we see material success and we then immediately equate flowing success and material, so therefore we can make a
person. Yes, no, that's what Kapila Muni mentions in the third canto, is that is the mentality of a neophyte devotee. And within neophyte devotee, very specifically a neophyte devotee in the mode of ignorance. Because he mentions that the different devotional service can be mixed with the different modes. That's why it's not pure. So in the mode of ignorance, you think that my material qualification is my devotional qualification. You know, as I give the example, let's say just some simple guy off the street, he joins not so well educated and this and that, you know, kind of squeak by, and then someone joins who's, let's say, very educated and is a professional. They join the same day. Now, the professional will consider he's more advanced than the other person, and there's a good chance many will consider he's more advanced, simply because he knows more of what to do and, I mean, how materially to do things. Does that make sense? But actually, it's the consciousness that defines whether one's more advanced or not. Now, if you're going to do something that requires knowledge and skill, you might ask the devotee who is a professional to do that aspect if that's his ability, because then service goes on nicely. But that's not the symptom of his advancement. Symptom of advancement is that he can consistently do that for Krishna. That's then you can tell the symptom of advancement. So again, it's back to the mentality. While the other devotee may be doing something very simple, but because he's always doing for Krishna, that's his advancement. So it's seeing things connected to Krishna, doing things connected to Krishna, that's the symptom of advancement, not the material skill. That's why the thing, oh no, but if we develop the managerial skills and things like that, that will make the society go well. No, it'll never. In a million years, it'll never. Because then there's the thought that that's what makes things work. But Krishna is the potency. We see devotees that had no skills, no knowledge, no training, go and do stuff that because they were convinced and had that conviction, that nowadays that people who are very skilled won't take up. You know, if you were said, okay, here, go open a temple in this place. There are no devotees. You have no place. You have no money. You have no contacts. What will a professional say? It's impossible. So will they do it? No. Okay, so let's look at this here and this. But in the Prabhupada's time, that's how all the temples were opened. There were no temples. And devotees with exactly that much resources went and opened temples. That's the difference. So Krishna is the ability. And we have that conviction, he'll provide. You know, devotees are staying there, they're in London, they don't know what to do. The Beatles say, oh, you can come live with us. You name me one hippie on the planet that wouldn't have gone into, you know, symptoms of Mahabhava. They could even talk to the Beatles, let alone live in their house. But here the devotees are just there and like that, and hey, come live with us. So was that their arrangement? That was, they were so skillful and so expert and so trained, and that was just Krishna. That's the whole thing, is we have to understand is that we develop skill only because it supports the proper attitude. But if the focus is not on the attitude, how it'll develop, that's the problem. We think knowledge and skills takes effort, but qualities, oh, that'll just happen. That's the mistake. The spiritual is actually higher than the social. We'll put so much effort into social development, but will we put it into spiritual development? Does that make sense? Of course, we're engaging social in Krishna's service, but still, that mentality, that mood, all these things, that has to be developed. Okay.
Creation does not arise in skill.
Then we just come up, this is Brahma Jigyasa.
You've done that. Creation does not arise in skill.
Down. Next line.
Oh, okay. The creation does not arise whimsically, as atheistic men think. They say this world is unreal, there is no foundation, there is no God in control. It is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Because it's just they desire, they want, and that's all that's there. Their world, what they create for themselves, is based on their desire. So the point is they're not seeing, it's the Lord's desire. So because the Lord's desire is what is why the place is created, therefore it's about going back to Godhead. But this idea is that, no, it's just here for us to enjoy, and we do it whatever we like. And that's what makes it happen. We make it happen. We do. And people can say all these different things, and then something adjusts, and then it doesn't work. You know, as you have in the past, so many great civilizations, very, very developed and all that, and suddenly they just disappear. Why? Because the weather changed or something. You know, that's all. Weather changed, and they had to move. It wouldn't work anymore. Atheistic rascals think that there is no God and that the creation has taken place by chance. Just as a man and woman meet by chance and the woman becomes pregnant and gives birth to a child. Actually, however, this is not the fact. Right. Yeah, if they'd known that back in the 50s, you know, things would have, course of history might have changed. Actually, however, this is not the fact. The fact is that there is a purpose for this creation. To give the conditioned soul a chance to return to its original consciousness. Krishna consciousness. And then return home back to Godhead and be completely happy in the spiritual world. In the material world, the conditioned soul is given a chance to satisfy his senses, but at the same time he's informed by Vedic knowledge that this material world is not his actual place for happiness. Janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam. Bhagavad Gita 13:9. One must stop the repetition of birth and death. Every human being, therefore, should take advantage of this creation by understanding Krishna and his relationship with Krishna, and in this way return home back to Godhead. Right? So then taking this understanding, this knowledge, applying that into our situation, that's then what we want to do. That'll make things perfect. Like that. So if we're in a particular area developing certain things, that's fine. Those can remain. But the point is how to be Krishna conscious in that. That's the point. Now, if the area that we're dealing in is a recommended area, then that area can be then continued. But if it's not a recommended area, we'll find that at some point it's not so valuable anymore. Right? And even the recommended activities, we see change through life. The social activities, these other activities, the ashram, they change. But chanting, remembering Krishna, hearing about Krishna, associating with devotees, worship, that doesn't change. These things, the direct activities always remain. And the secondary activities, we manifest those too. Those change with time. Is that... Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the same verse. Mercy being the cause of his appearance is shown by Kaimutya, the action in the form of glance of the Lord, whom Saha, upon Prakriti, Maya Cheshtitam, for creation, maintenance and destruction of the Jiva's bodies, is certainly he, because of his mercy. What then to speak of his activities such as lifting Govardhan, which are completely devoid of Maya? The Lord's mercy consists of glancing over Maya, thinking, let the Jivas get their material enjoyment after attaining material intelligence and senses. But how can this be mercy? The Jivas, by enjoying material objects and undergoing creation, maintenance, and destruction of the universe, simply experience suffering. He asks so that the Jivas become detached from the world and its enjoyments, right? So this whole thing, things aren't going right. How can this happen? We're a devotee, but that's the way the material world is designed. That's like getting on a roller coaster ride and wondering why I'm getting nauseous. You know, why didn't God make roller coaster rides so you don't get sick? You know, like that. So that's just not the way it works. If the material world is that's how it's designed, because you get your enjoyment, but then you figure out it's not actual enjoyment, because we've made the mistake of turning our attention away from enjoyment connected to Krishna with his paraphernalia to enjoyment being just interacting with his paraphernalia, no Krishna. So then the material world, because it's the paraphernalia that changes, therefore the material world is based on the temporariness. It's always changing. Right? So then we suffer. Because here the change is you know, very obvious. Changing bodies, changing situations, families, everything like that. On the spiritual realm, the change is just variety within an eternal situation. But here the situations are temporary also, and so then it changes. So then the living entity gets frustrated. Why? Because the living entity is eternal. And they want happiness, which is connected with eternal. Since everything is temporary, it can't be eternal, therefore it can't give happiness. But we think that it will, so therefore Krishna gives us the opportunity to try. Does that make sense? So it's So then, no sense. But then when the living entity wants to know why I'm suffering, how I actually become happy, because the living entity wants to be happy, that's when then Krishna puts them in contact with the bona fide spiritual master, right? That's when you come in contact with the devotees. Then you learn about Krishna. Then you can change your direction. So, he acts so that the jivas become detached from the world and its enjoyments, right? Because these enjoyments don't give you happiness, so you become detached. Becoming detached, now you can be open to the idea of becoming attached to Krishna, since the living entities by nature have to be attached because they're Shakti. But now, instead of being connected to material energy, they will connect to the spiritual energy. By bhakti, jnana, and vairag, and so that the jiva can attain the Lord, Atma Labhaya. Without intelligence and senses, the jiva cannot attain bhakti or jnana. The cause of the creation of the Lord is mercy to jiva. So you're going to be engaged in devotional service because you have intelligence, you have the senses, all these aspects. These are what you're going to engage. But since we want to engage them not connected to Krishna, then we can distract ourselves in that way until we get tired of it and then want to use it in the proper way. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you know, the child's time to eat. No, the child, no, I want to play. It's like, no, you try to convince them, they're not convinced. Okay, go play. And then you take everything, put it all away, and go away. And then after playing, they'll get hungry. Now they'll be looking for where's food. You understand? So that's the thing, is that we want to do like that. Krishna gives us the facility, but what the facility we're given is the same facility needed for Krishna consciousness. But we don't use it for Krishna consciousness. That's the whole thing. We think Krishna is one thing, and material life is something separate. No, material life means misuse of facilities for Krishna consciousness. Let's say we have a temple, you use it just like it's your own house. That's the material world. We're taking, this is all material, and then there's this little corner over here where there's some Hare Krishna devotees wearing bed sheets and all that kind of jazz. But the whole point is no, the whole material world is Krishna's. And it may be a lot of people, maybe very popular, that people misuse it. But it still doesn't mean it's not Krishna's. Yes.
So this is a mistake sometimes that we may see a material situation in a negative way, therefore we artificially distance ourselves from that situation, but because perhaps the desire has not been purified or our vision is not correct, that still is in the back of our mind, so actually it should be purifying our vision to see that.
Yes, because the point is we have a nature, it functions in a particular environment. You can do certain things. That's the environment, things that you do for Krishna. But we're used to seeing them not connected to Krishna, and so that gives us pain. So when that pain gets enough, we reject those activities. But the point is only doing those activities. You know, it's just like the guy, you know, he gets trained in a particular way and something goes wrong, so then he goes off the rails, goes out on a ship for, you know, some years and does this and that, tries to do anything but that, but at the end of the day he comes back to whatever he's doing and then it all works. Right? So the whole point is that that's just how it's supposed to function. You're supposed to engage, but by that, because what is that? That's impersonalism. That it created problem for me in my mind and senses. So therefore, it's bad. So therefore, spiritual means not anything to do with the mind and senses. So I can't engage those things. But that's why the rules are there. Is how you're supposed to engage. Then you know how it's supposed to be engaged. That's what is there. So the regulations are how to use it, and how to use it in an environment where everybody else is doing the same thing. So it's actually, the Vedas are the only thing that's actually personal and individual. But we think, so many rules, it's impersonal and it's not individual. But it's the only thing that actually addresses that. But through the mode of ignorance, we think, no, if we all can just do whatever we want, and whatever we want means we all actually have to do the same thing. Because if you have those who won't follow any rules, you have to not be following the rules the way they're not following the rules. Because if you follow any kind of rules differently than they do, or you make it, then it's just like that. So it's you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Yes.
In devotional service also we find many devotees who they oscillate between bhog and tyag. They become
bhog and tyag, yes.
That is a weakness lie.
It's just a matter of not seeing fully how to engage the nature. Someone goes too much one way, goes too much the other way. So they have to find a balance of it. So in other words, some area that you think, I engage, and then, no, that's bad, then you pull back. The point is no, I should engage, but in a regulated way, which recommended. Then I'll be able to maintain it. Right? And so that's why then it's also giving you have stages of life. You have different mentalities, so different activities. That's where then you understand what's yours and what's someone else's. So if it's yours, fine. If it's not yours, then even though you can do it expertly, it doesn't mean you should be doing it. So then that's adjusted. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then, but that's if one's aware, then one will be able to adjust it with time. Is that good? Okay, so we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nitai Gaura Premanandini.